A reading from the Gospel of John. So the soldiers, their officers, and the Jewish police arrested Jesus and bound him. First they took him to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was better to have one person die for the people. Simon Peter and another disciple followed Jesus. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter was standing outside at the gate. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out, spoke to the woman who guarded the gate, and brought Peter in. The woman said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the slaves and the police had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing around it and warming themselves. Peter was also standing with them and warming himself. Then the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard what I said to them. They know what I said." When he had said this, one of the police standing nearby struck Jesus in the face, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered, "If I have spoken wrongly, testify to the wrong. But if I have spoken rightly, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. They asked him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the slaves of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Again, Peter denied it, and at that moment the cock crowed. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Please be seated.
Well, I think all of us who have faith, who believe in Jesus, who seek to follow him, will find times in our life where our faith is persecuted, where we come up against pressure or temptation, and where we're at least tempted to turn our backs on God. But I think when we think of the word persecution and what it really is, I think in a way it's hard for us to imagine in this country or really know what persecution is really like. Because as much as sometimes we want to talk about, you know, is prayer in school allowed or can we display the Ten Commandments in public or this issue or that issue regarding faith in our communities, really our lives are not under threat for worshiping Jesus. Really, we have the freedom pretty much to worship who we want, when we want, how we want. And so we have a great blessing living in this free place to worship as we do. And I've never lived in this state of true persecution either, but when I was in Egypt, I met a community that really had experienced many, many years of persecution. In Egypt, there's certainly many Muslims, and it's kind of the dominant religious force, but about 10% of the population is Christian. And Christianity came to Egypt very early. Within the first few decades, St. Mark went to Egypt and evangelized Egypt. And so there was a Christian church there many, many years. But in the Middle Ages, Islam came in and kind of became the main religion. And for about 1,000 years, Christianity has really lived in Egypt in an Islamic society. And certainly many Muslims have been very kind to Christians and have been good neighbors to them. But of course, there have been many other examples where Christians in Egypt have faced intense persecution, where they've been pressurized to convert, where they've been threatened with their lives for being Christian, where churches have been burnt down. Just recently, in the past few years, post-revolution in Egypt, there have been many church burnings because there's some radical groups who don't really like the fact that there's Christians there. And so in lots of different ways, Egyptian Christians know what it's like to be persecuted. But one thing that I really admired when I met Egyptian Christians is that even in the face of persecution, they don't really back down from their faith. They don't hide who they are. But in fact, I think partially because of their persecution, they're even more dedicated to the fact that they've been claimed by Christ. And I have an image here for you. This is a picture of a Coptic cross. It's just a style of cross they have, tattooed on the wrist of, I assume, an Egyptian Christian. And this wasn't a rare thing. Many, many Egyptian Christians that I met would actually carry this tattoo of a cross on their wrist. And I think it was a sign to them that come what may, they were going to be people of Christ as a community and as individuals. They had been claimed by Christ. And for them, church wasn't first and foremost about a building they went to, but it was about who they are as people, people who belong to Christ. Well, today, as we think about persecution, we hear a story where the true persecution is starting to begin. First of Jesus, who's been arrested and has been taken to the house of the high priest. And of course, Peter then starts to experience persecution as he tries to follow Jesus. And we hear that as Jesus is taken into the house of the high priest to be questioned and he's being beaten a little bit, Peter follows with another disciple kind of at a distance because he wants to be with Jesus during this time of trial. He's incredibly dedicated, and so he goes and he hangs out in the courtyard of this high priest where inside Jesus is being questioned. And of course, most of us know a lot of this story as we just heard it, that eventually Peter is questioned by some of the people there, the soldiers and the servants who say, "You know, Peter, aren't you one of his disciples? I think we've seen you with Jesus." And Peter, you know, clearly afraid that he's going to be recognized and face the same fate that Jesus does, denies Jesus three times and says, "No, I am not his disciple," which we hear Jesus had actually predicted, and then the rooster crows, and Peter goes away weeping because he knows he's betrayed Jesus. And so I wonder, how do we hear this story and how do we understand it? What word comes to your mind when you think of Peter as he acted in this story? I think it'd probably be easy to associate some pretty negative words to Peter in this story. We could associate the word coward. We could associate the word with him traitor, an unfaithful disciple, a betrayer of Jesus. And after all, this is someone who claimed earlier in the gospel that no matter what happens, Jesus, I will stay by your side. And yet he abandons Jesus in this moment of true struggle. But I don't think this is really how the story intends us to read it. I don't think the Gospel of John means to say, look how bad Peter is and notice what an unsuccessful disciple he is and think of yourselves how much better you would have done in his situation. I think more the point of this story is that we are all Peter. And to judge Peter harshly would really be to judge ourselves harshly too, because just like Peter, all of us are going to seek to follow Jesus, and yet when we receive pressure, when we're afraid, when we have doubts, we're going to turn our back on Jesus from time to time. And really, have any of us ever experienced the kind of persecution, the kind of threat that Peter was experiencing? Have any of us ever had a gun held to our head saying, "Do you believe in Christ?" And we have to remember that Peter already and Jesus and all the disciples had a good idea of what was going to happen to Jesus by this time. We were hearing in other stories that we've read in the past few weeks in the Gospel of John how there's this continuous reporting happening towards the end of the Gospel saying, "Jesus, don't go to Jerusalem because the religious authorities there want to kill you. Do not go." And his disciples encourage him, beg him not to go. But Jesus says, "You know what? Whether or not it's dangerous there, this is my mission to go to Jerusalem, and so I'm going anyway." And so, of course, now this has come to be true. Jesus is in the house of the high priest. Peter knows he's probably going to be killed or at least face some pretty serious persecution. And so when he's asked, "Are you one of his disciples?" he realizes that he can be in the exact same danger that Jesus is currently experiencing. So Peter's faith and his discipleship is tested. And ultimately, at this point, Peter does fail the test. Well, what does this story about Peter's failure, at least for a time being, have to teach us? I think first and foremost, it teaches us something about God as we see him in Jesus Christ. Because in this story, we learn that God is faithful even when we are unfaithful to God. Jesus dies for Peter and is persecuted for Peter, even in the midst of Peter denying Jesus. And we can imagine maybe a different Son of God who is more interested in self-preservation and tit for tat and getting even, who maybe knows that Peter's just betrayed him and he knows the disciples have fled. And Jesus could have been thinking as he's being persecuted, as he's being questioned and beaten and he's on his way to the cross, he could have thought, "Wait a minute, here I am sticking my neck out for these disciples and here they abandon me in my moment of need." And I imagine since he's the Son of God, he could have kind of snapped his fingers and, you know, kind of beamed himself up and been somewhere else in heaven and been just fine and not have gone to the cross for us. But Jesus doesn't say this, he doesn't think this, and he doesn't do this. Jesus remains where he is and faces all the pain that's going to be delivered on him and the ridicule and the torture, and he puts one foot in front of the other, and he dies for Peter, and he dies for you and me, even in the midst of our unfaithfulness to him. And so I think that's the first and most important lesson it teaches us in this story, that God is faithful to us, even though we are often unfaithful to God. But I think the other story this story wants to tell is a lesson about what it means to be a disciple. I think as we think about the word disciple, you hear the word disciple, it sounds like a high level of Christianity, like a high level of following Jesus. And I think a lot of us, when we hear the word disciple, we don't want to apply it to ourselves and say, yes, I'm a disciple, because it sounds like you have to be a really good Christian to be a disciple, and that if you mess up, like most of us do, or maybe all of us do, you know, I'm not quite ready to be a disciple. I'm not that dedicated to Jesus. I'm just not that good of a person. And so I don't think God can quite use me to be his disciples. But I think another lesson this story wants to teach us is this, that we as humans and as followers of Jesus are going to mess up, and that God makes us his disciples nonetheless. And I think this is where the "we are all Peter" thing comes into play. We follow Jesus just like Peter as far as the courtyard many times, right? We say, Jesus, I love you, I want to follow you, and we follow Jesus, but then we face some sort of temptation, we face some sort of doubt, we're afraid, and suddenly our faith withers away, and we lose sight of who we are in Christ. I remember one of my moments of most fearing was when we were living in Egypt. My wife and I actually lived there when there was the revolution happening initially, when the dictator Mubarak was overthrown. And we lived in this apartment with about six stories, and so we had this balcony that overlooked one of the big city streets. And so one day, the revolution was starting to heat up, and we were watching on the news. We were told to hang out in our houses because it was getting quite heated. And we were watching on the news as police and protesters were kind of throwing rocks at each other, battling on the street downtown. And eventually, we watched on the news as the crowd swelled and the police basically started running away, and they disappeared from the streets. And then chaos ensued. And the government didn't like what was happening, so they turned off the phones, and then they turned off the TV, so we had no idea what was going on beyond our community. And then as light started to wither away and it got dark, we started hearing gunshots all around us where we lived. And we hadn't known it, but it turns out that down the street to the right, if we looked at our balcony, maybe four blocks away, there was a police station. And we listened as the gunshots rang, and then we saw a big crowd gather around the police station, and they were all yelling, and we watched as they burned the police station down. And so we were terrified at this point. And we had this kind of closet, a cutout closet, and inside of it was a wooden wardrobe where we'd put some of our clothes. And I remember there was, as we were afraid of what was going to happen, we actually pulled the wardrobe out a little bit more so that if need be, we could hide behind the wardrobe. And another reality I remember about when I was so afraid was that I really lost track of helping anyone else besides myself and my wife. I mean, my thoughts were not so much, how can I help another person? I mean, certainly I felt for the Egyptian people and all of our friends and family, but really my mind got into survival mode, and all I could think about is, are we going to survive ourselves? Well, in the midst of this, kind of huddling in our house, hearing all these gunshots, being terrified, we get a knock on the door, which was a scary thing to hear because we didn't know who it would be. So we run over to the door, and we look through the eye hole, and we see it's our neighbor. There were these two women who lived next to us, and we didn't talk to them very much because they pretty much spoke Arabic, and our Arabic wasn't very good. But they had knocked on our door, and we opened the door, and one of these women was there, and she was holding a pitcher of lemonade. And she said, "Can I come in?" And she said, "I made you this lemonade." And it was such a nice gesture. And then she looks at us and she says, "I just wanted you to know that everything's going to be okay." And at this moment, even though she was just some random lady who probably couldn't do anything to protect us if anyone wanted to hurt us, this word of "everything's going to be okay," along with this delicious hand-squeezed lemonade, was like the presence of Christ for us. And I could really relate to Peter in this story, because just as Peter kind of abandons Jesus even when Jesus is serving the world, here I was worrying about our own survival, and here this lady next to us was thinking about her neighbor and how she could serve her neighbor. Well, the remarkable thing about Peter's story, if we keep on reading the gospel and go on to the book of Acts and listen to the stories of the early church, is that Peter is actually going to go on to be the early leader of the church. He's going to be the first kind of leader after Jesus leaves to set the church on its way. And Jesus even says to Peter, "You are going to be my rock on which the church is built, and the gates of hell will not prevail against you." And earlier I asked you, you know, what word comes to mind when you see Peter in this story of betraying Jesus? Negative words probably come to mind. But maybe another word that should come to our minds is the word disciple. Because Peter's story is what discipleship is about. Jesus doesn't call perfect people to discipleship. He calls people like Peter, he calls people like you, and he calls people like me. And his story of discipleship is the story we're all going to live out. It's the story where we're drawn to Jesus, where we learn from him and we worship him and we say, "Oh, we want to follow you." And we start following Jesus for a bit and we get to the courtyard and then we're afraid or we face temptation or whatever and we fail Jesus in some way. But then Jesus, even in the midst of our turning our backs on him, he dies for us and he says, "Come back to me. Be my disciple, forget your shortcomings and failures, just follow me and I will give you life." Probably for most of us, if not all of us, we're not going to have a little cross tattooed on our wrist. We can be thankful that we don't live under the persecution our Egyptian brothers and sisters do who are Christian. But I think maybe what this story reminds us to do is to carry that cross along with us in our hearts in some way. To remember that who we are, even though we're mess-ups, even though we're not always going to follow successfully, who we are fundamentally are followers of Jesus who've been called by Jesus, for whom Jesus has died. And so we can give thanks that even in our unfaithfulness, God is faithful. And even though we have shortcomings, we are called to be his disciples. Amen. Let's stand as we continue in song.